Across the nation, over 700...
The Hannity kicking gonna stop. It's gonna start now. It's gonna run through the summer. And it's hot, hot, hot in public, if you will.
I came to play.
There's a price to pay. Time for you to get down on your knees.
What is going on, folks? My name is Ken Tuccio. You might know me as the host of the Welcome to Connecticut podcast, but tonight I am house-sitting for the 50th episode of Plum Love Foods live right here on Blog Talk Radio. You know, 50 episodes of a podcast, man, 50 episodes. I can tell you firsthand, my podcast, Welcome to Connecticut, it is going on episode 85 this week, episode Ocho Cinco, if you're a football fan. And having done 50 episodes, I can tell you 50 episodes is tough to do. It's an accomplishment. And, you know, it's one of those things that should be celebrated. And Plum had this kind of cool idea that for episode 50, he would tag out of hosting duties and tag himself into the role of guest. So that's what we're going to be doing tonight. That's what's happening tonight live on Plum Love Food. We are giving you guys the chance to get to know Chef Plum a little bit more. And, you know, Plum is a dude who every single week comes on this show without a net, you know, without a net. What I do is tape. What Plum does is come on here without a net, and he interviews some of the coolest people from the culinary world and beyond the culinary world. But, you know, you don't really get a chance to get to know Plum, you know, but that's what this show is. That's what we're doing right here. You're going to get a chance to get to know the guy who kind of hosts the party every week, Chef Plum. And I can tell you firsthand that this past year, Plum and I, we've become pretty tight. We've become buddies. You know, we've shared more than a few adult beverages together. We've enjoyed some good times. And he's the kind of dude that you want to get to know. You know, so hopefully in the next hour or so, we'll make that happen. You guys can get to know Chef Plum on a totally different level. And, you know, we want this tonight. We want this to be interactive. So, you know, I'm going to urge all of you guys and girls listening, you know, hop on Twitter, and as we're talking tonight, let us know what you're thinking while the conversation is going. You can follow me. My Twitter is at Rhymes with Pen. You can follow Chef Plum. His Twitter is at Chef_Plum. And, you know, shoot us your comments throughout the night. Let us know what you're thinking. If there's something you want to ask Plum, tweet it our way. You know, maybe we'll start talking about it. But, you know, I'm going to stop blabbering. Let's get rolling. I'm going to bring in my buddy, 50 episodes strong. Chef Plum, welcome to your show.
You know what, dude? It's very strange to sit here and listen to, like, my gimmick in my stupid background hip-hop music or whatever we call it and hear you talk about me. I tell you what, that intro you gave me was well undeserved, I think, man. But I really appreciate you coming on and doing this, man. It's awesome. And it's exciting to have the opportunity to do this. A lot of people have asked about it. And to come on and do this and have you be the guy that does it, man, it's just it means a lot to me. So I really appreciate it. Thanks, dude.
Hey, no, happy to do it, man. Happy to do it. But, you know, it's kind of funny because when you asked me to do this, I started thinking that, like, you know, you and I, you know, we talk a lot, we hang out a lot, but I don't think I've ever actually asked you about, like, how you've gotten started in, like, the culinary world. Because I know you. You and I met because you invited my wife and I to a Dinner Underground event a while back, and then you and I started talking. But, you know, you never kind of gave me, like, your background. Like, how did you decide you wanted to get rolling in the culinary world? How'd that start off with
you? You know, I've kept these things pretty quiet. You know, I don't know. Like, I don't really get into the whole thing a lot about me on this particular program because, you know, it's more about the guests. So I try not to talk a lot about me. Occasionally, you have to throw a story in there to relate or something like that. But for me, you know, food is kind of, it's tough. It's kind of all I've ever done. You know, my first job ever was working in a Taco Bell. And, you know, we touched on that. You can check it out on Ken's podcast, which is fantastic. But I started doing it that, man. I worked at Taco Bell and just kind of, it kind of just became necessity. It became what I did. It became that's what I could do. You know, some guys are lifeguards for the summer. Some guys are doing roofing for the summer. I worked in a fast food restaurant. That's kind of what got me started.
See, I worked in a fast food restaurant too. I know you and I have talked about it. When I was in high school, I worked in a fast food restaurant, but you know, my experience in a fast food restaurant was not something that really drew me to the culinary industry. I went in a different direction. What was it about like your experience working in food service, working with like a fast food restaurant that made you say, you know, this is the direction I want to go in?
I think it was the camaraderie. I think it was just having that, you know, my family scenario was a little strange, and it was growing up a little bit. You know, I had two older stepbrothers, and you know, my father died when I was very young, and you know, my mom worked a lot, and it was just kind of not, I don't know. I really think it was, I've tried to figure this out a lot, and a lot of people in this business have, you know, similar stories like this, but it's just, I think it was, I don't know, the camaraderie, the feeling of acceptance, the feeling of friendship, the feeling of people who would be there to you know, for you to catch you if you fall, you know, kind of having that safety net with that. I think that's what it was, and it's true, and I think a lot of people in this business also still know that, you know, it's about, you know, when you work with a kitchen, a group of people, you know, it's this band of pirates, but they're still the most loyal people you'll ever meet, you know?
You know, it's interesting because I think I've told you before, like, I'm not involved in the culinary world, but I'm a huge admirer of it. And one of the things that I always liked was how it was kind of like a brotherhood. You know, it's mm-hmm. really these people who are looking out for one another, and it's like this camaraderie, and, you know, it reminds me very much of like a sports locker room of like, or back when I worked in wrestling, like a wrestling locker room. And, you know, they all seem to like get along with one another. They all seem to look out for one another. What is it about, you know, the culinary world or working in that industry that makes people so tight? Is it because you're working those long hours together and those long days together, you just kind of become family?
It's nuts, man. You really just, like, the whole, like, game of this show has really been picked up with you out here. You're, like, this professional broadcaster coming in, like, asking real questions. I'm waiting to throw in a dick joke and talk about opening a beer.
Listen, you haven't gotten the bill yet, so.
Oh, no. Okay, wait. I'll wait for that to happen. We can put it on the cat. yeah, you know, I think it's just, you know, when you feel that camaraderie of people, you know, generally – it's a little bit different now, but when I first started in this business, and God, I'm going on 20 years now, it's just having that camaraderie, and it takes time. You have to kind of build up to it, but once it's that feeling of acceptance that once you finally get it in this industry, I mean, you know, I think maybe it's true with every job. Like, there's just, there truly is nothing better in this world to me, aside from the love of your family and all that stuff, let's take all that aside professionally, than the respect of your peers, to have that. And that's something that I think is just what, you know, kind of drives me from a culinary standpoint, but as well as that acceptance that you get from working in a kitchen, like, you get respected by those peers, and it just really, I don't know, it's a weird thing to describe.
Well, what's the, I want to kind of know what the progression was, because, you know, you obviously don't go from working in a fast food restaurant to all of a sudden working in a professional kitchen,
right,
with, you know, highly trained chefs. You know, what were the steps for you after you decided you wanted to, you know, get involved in this and, you know, you had that experience on a fast food level? What were your steps after that to kind of get involved in the culinary world on a professional level beyond fast food?
You know, I think my big thing was I was doing that whole fast food gimmick, and then it was time to go to college. I did it pretty much all through high school. And then it was time to go to college, and, you know, I ended up going to Virginia Commonwealth University for a little bit. But I say a little bit because it's the truth, just for a little bit, because I ended up working in restaurants. You know, I started off as a server at Applebee's, and then they moved me to the kitchen, and then, you know, which is, you know, all of, you know, not to shit on Applebee's, but it's all pressing a microwave button a million times. But moving on from that to kind of falling in love with it, understanding what it was about. And to me, it was more about at the time, you know, it was about the partying. It was about all these hot girls and, you know, everybody's coming back to the apartment. We're going to drink beers. And it's about, you know, getting up when the sun's going down and going to work and coming home as the sun, you know, at nighttime. And then you go to bed when the sun's coming up because you stayed up all night. And, you know, I kind of liked the lifestyle of it. And it was fun to me. And you know, having this group of people, you know, it was 30 people or so that you just constantly were friends with, or you were always hanging out with. It could be any mix of those groups of people. But the difference was, is that all of them felt like they were your best friends, because you felt like every night you know, you go to battle with them, you know, and I use that term loosely, but in the restaurant world, when you have a service, it's a busy night. And these people, they're with you, you, whether you choose them or not, that's who's there. And it could be someone you never would be friends with outside of that scenario, but you become great friends with them there because of what you go through. I was friends with a guy named Doc who had 5 gold teeth and barely spoke English. Well, it sounded like English, but you couldn't quite tell. And, you know, we became great friends in 2 very, very different worlds. And but we became great friends. And what ended up happening from there was I went to another sports bar type place was opening up. And I went over there with a couple buddies from the Applebee's scenario. And we applied and we started working there. And it was, I think that's where I fell in love with it. I mean, that place, you know, I always say, Ken, that food has been very good to me. Food has given me a great life. Food has given me my beautiful wife. Food has given me everything I've needed in life. And I think it all started right there at that restaurant.
See, it's really interesting. It's really interesting because I knew a lot of people, obviously, who worked in restaurants like Applebee's and, you know, like, you know, a lot of, you can go different routes from that. Like, there are a lot of guys who probably go the route of like Ryan Reynolds and waiting, and they're just, you know, they're working in that restaurant for, you know, 20, 25 years and just diet sliding by not wanting to do anything else. I find it kind of interesting that you have that passion that you wanted to move, that you wanted to move forward. Did you know what direction you wanted to go into in the culinary world, or was it kind of just like we're just gonna go in this direction and see where it goes?
You know, I knew there was more. That was my thing. I knew there was more. I didn't think it would ever be my life. I didn't think it would be that's what I'm gonna do the rest of my life. Well, at some point you figure that out when you end up paying $1 billion to go to CIA. But I mean, before that, like, I didn't realize that's what it was gonna be. You know, to me it was about having this family of people who they took care of me. They looked out for me. They would help. They would just be there. And you know, I did the same thing for them. I remember very, very, I don't know how to tell the story, but, you know, very, very deeply, I remember about how I'm working doubles all one weekend and talking to the owners of the restaurant about being paid in cash so I could help a certain person pay their rent for the night. For the month, because she couldn't cover it, and then only to find out that in the long run she ended up going to the beach the weekend that I was working doubles. It's a long story, but but when you find out, like, that shit just sucks. But when you get your legs cut out from underneath you and your heart pulled out, and then but you have all these people who you're with nonstop every day, you know, catch you and remind you that, you know, life's going to go forward, life's going to move on. And I mean, you, when you work next to somebody as close as we do in a kitchen on a line for 12 hours at a time, I mean, there's just no way not to become so tight with them, so friendly with them. You know, it's just impossible.
So I want to talk a little bit, because you mentioned it briefly, and I'm really interested in it. Your time in CIA.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of there's a lot of great stories that come out about people who have gone there. As someone who, once again, not in the culinary world, it's something that's very interesting to me. You know, there's some stories that make it seem very intimidating. There are other stories that make it seem, you know, very much, you know, the best time of your life. Where would you lump in your time at CIA for you?
You know, CIA for me was, I went to CIA after running a restaurant. That restaurant that I went to after Applebee's, I ended up working my way up to being the kitchen manager and running the show at one of their other locations, simply because I loved being on the line. I loved the control, I guess. I loved feeling like we were accomplishing something every single day. You know, when you come from a world of having guidance counselors tell you that you're never going to be anything, and, you know, that you should probably look into doing something different with your life, and then you go into a world where it feels like you're accomplishing these giant feats and you're making sales happen and you're pushing something forward and you're all working in one direction. It's really invigorating. What it ended up doing was I ended up applying to CIA just to see what would happen. And they accepted me with the caveat that I had to take a college level algebra class and a college level English class. And then they would
because
take me.
Because algebra is really important in the culinary world, correct?
Well, X minus Y divided by Z is really important when doing inventory. That was sarcasm.
I'm sure.
You know, man, but it was cool because when I went to CIA, you know, I had hair down to my waist. I wore black eye makeup and a trench coat. Like, that's where I was at. I was emo plum. And when I walked in the door at CIA, they were like, kid, you got to cut your hair and you got to cut this shit out. It's a private school. You sign your life away when you go there. And I remember very vividly walking into gastronomy the first day of school. I'm driving, you know, I arrive at this culinary school. I'm by myself. My girlfriend at the time helps move me into a dorm room. I'm 26 years old. I'm like, what the fuck am I doing in a goddamn dorm room? And, you know, she leaves me because she has to. And here I am in this weird dorm room by myself waiting for some roommate I haven't met yet. You know, I'm doing all these things that people do when they're 18 years old. You know, I never had done that. When I went to VCU, Virginia Commonwealth University, I had an apartment. Like, it was very different. And the next morning, I had to be up at this class. And, you know, all they tell you is, you better not be late. The door closes. You had to be there at 7 a.m. The door closes and locks at 7:01. Do not be late.
Was that a super tough adjustment for you?
Oh, my God. I had no idea what I was in for. You know, I was coming from a world of, like I said, you know, you were up all night and, you know, you're partying and having a great time. And the next thing I know, here I am in a place where, fuck, I got to be up at 7 a.m. and I better not be late. And this wasn't, there was no iPhones or shit like that at this time. It was, you know, well, the excuse of, well, my clock is 2 minutes off than your clock. Well, then you need to set your fucking clock what mine is. And there's no excuse. It's just zero excuses. And showed up. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, man. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to step on you.
Yeah, no, it's okay. I showed up to gastronomy, and you walk in the door, and literally the big doors close behind you. You sit at the table or at the whatever the thing is in front of the lectern, and they say everything you think you know in this business you need to forget right now because it's all going to change. And they say to you, this is the way it works. There are 5,000 people that want to have your spot. If you don't want to be here, get out. And they say, if you don't want to be here and you think you want to be here, we will weed you out. And they were there. I mean, it's insane, man. They said, you know, if you're told to be at a class, you need to be there 5 minutes early. If you're there on time, you're late. If you're late more than once, leave. If you have to leave more than once, retake a class. If you have to retake more than one class, we will expel you from school. And that's what it's
so
about.
You walk into CIA, like, you know, with the trench coat and the eye makeup and the long hair, you're looking like NWO Sting. And, mm-hmm. you know,
nice
you're doing
nice
all
reference.
That. You're going in, coming from kind of like a background where you're experiencing all this party stuff. What was the reaction from like the other students to you? Because I got to assume you were a little older than a lot of guys who were there. I mean, I'm going to think. You were coming from
it's
a bit of a different background. You probably looked a little different. I mean, did the other students accept you right away? Were you kind of like the oddball out?
No, it was interesting, man, because, you know, my group of people that I was with, I mean, I had a guy named Art Moskowitz, I'll never forget. He was, you know, 61 years old, super nice guy. And then we had another girl who was, you know, 19 years old. She had just finished high school, went and did her 6 months at a restaurant and had CIA accept her. And it was a very eclectic group of people. You know how shy I am, so I tried to make friends immediately. I mean, people accepted me right away for the most part. That part wasn't too hard. Especially the first go around in school. But, you know, when they close that door and they hit you with all this shit, I mean, it's pretty intense. You're like, what the hell am I doing? You know? But what they do that for is to show you what the standard is. This is the standard. This is no fucking joke. This is the way it's supposed to be, and you take it seriously or get the hell out. And it gets beaten to your brain, man. And, you know, to this very day, I still live by that. This is what the standard is. It should be unreachable. You should be trying to reach it every day, because when you do that, you will make yourself better.
Did you have any points during the process where you kind of said, you know what, you know, fuck this. I don't want anything to do with this. This was a mistake. I want to go back to the party life. I want to go back to what I was enjoying before. I don't want to go this far into the culinary world. Or were you always like, nope, I started it. I'm going to finish it.
Never. I never wanted to quit. I don't believe in that. I graduated high school 3 months late, Kenny, because I tapped out of a biology class and I just felt like I couldn't do it, and graduated high school 3 months late. And I felt in my mind that I owed myself as well as my family the chance to show them that I'm not some, you know, just jerk off, some guy who's not going to do it, some guy who gives up on shit. And, you know, just not to fast forward too much, but we can rewind, obviously. My group at CIA started off with 74 people. And 38 of us finished.
Wow. Is that the norm for a CIA class? Did it have that kind of drop-off?
It was then. They weed you out. They try to make you quit. I watched the gentleman I mentioned before, the 61-year-old Arthur Moskowitz, I watched get brought to tears by a woman because he didn't understand how to make a corned beef. and this woman berated him for 5 minutes, and he got brought to tears. And it was just, that's what they did. That's what they did at that time. They would just berate you and treat you as if you were garbage. Bro, you had to, in the hallways, you had to yield to the chef instructors when you saw them and say good morning to them or good afternoon to them. You had to speak to them, acknowledge them. You had to. Because if you didn't, they would fucking stop you, ask you for your name, and they would write you up and all kinds of shit. It was nuts. It's the closest thing to the military I've ever done in my life.
I find it kind of interesting because, I mean, the fact that you had a 61-year-old classmate is really interesting. I didn't know that the classes in CIA were that diverse.
Yeah, it was insane. He was a banker, and he loved food and loved the food business and wanted to get into it. And he ended up doing everything he had to do to go to CIA and dropped his whole banking career. And you know what, man? I give that dude credit, brother. He finished. He finished it. He did not tap out. He did not cave under it. He fucking finished. And that dude's awesome. I wish I could still talk to that guy, actually.
No, I mean, any guy who at 61 is willing to change careers is a guy you kind of want to sit down and have a drink with. Because that's, I mean, there are some people who are afraid to change careers at the age of 31, let alone 61. But
yeah, I mean, they would beat you up in these classes, man. Like, classes would, I mean, just to fuck with you, they would have a class start at 2:30 a.m. Just to fuck with you. That AM pantry was 2:30 a.m. It's ridiculous. And class wasn't like, okay, we'll go to class for 4 hours. Class was 10 hours long. And there's no breaks. There's none of that shit. I mean, that's what you do because that's what the business is.
I got to assume you kind of got to use like something like a 2:30 a.m. class probably does come in handy when you're working those really long shifts in the kitchen.
It does. It really, you know, I had never done any kind of food like that because the school is self-sustaining the way it works. And when people have morning classes, you know, part of what you do when you go to CIA is you have a meal plan like you would at any other college. But the classes are preparing your meals. So you go to AM Pantry for breakfast, and there's two of them. You can pick which one you want to go to. But the guys who are in there doing your breakfast that morning, that's a class that you have to go to. And at some point, you have to be in there. So everybody really kind of, you know, you kind of look out for each other. It's that whole, to me, it's almost like the whole military thing where you have the drill sergeant and the drill sergeant's an asshole to make all the recruits hate them so they don't hate each other sort of thing. So they have all a common bond. And I think that's kind of what they subscribed to at the time.
When you, I don't want to like completely fast forward through CIA, but I'm kind of curious though, like, you know, when you're done with CIA, when you get out of there, was it a lot easier? Did that open a lot of doors for you, a lot of opportunities for you in the food industry, in the culinary industry?
Yes and no. A lot of people hate CIA. They hate CIA a lot, especially in the business. Well, some people don't like it because they think people who come out of it are big-headed, you know, and a little bit conceited, a little bit, you know, they think that, but. And part of it, I mean, probably could be true. Some guys come out pretty big-headed with it and everything. But, you know, the reason why you come out that way is because, I mean, you've been through hell. Like, you've been through what you've been through and what you've learned. There's a reason. You know, I equate it to this. You know how you're watching, like, an NFL game and the guys come on and they're like, you know, they're like, Ohio State University, when they show, like, the guy's head and where they went to college or whatever. You know, I think of CIA the same way. You know, it's like, the Culinary Institute of America. It's the Harvard of culinary schools for a reason. And then the reason is because that standard is so fucking hard. And if you don't make that standard, they will boot you out. They don't give a shit. And to me, I think a lot of people take, you come out with that mentality in your head because you know what you've been through. And, you know, a lot of people find that, you know, kind of uninviting when they meet someone who's been to CIA and whatnot. You know, my mentor, Chef Lonnie Hewat, he hates CIA. And I changed his opinion on it because, you know, it's what it is.
So what happened to you? You get out of CIA. What's the next step for you? What are you doing?
It's the funniest thing ever. I went back to my old job, at the sports bar in Virginia. I finished CIA. I wasn't sure what my plan was going to be. I called the owner, this guy, John Sweeney, who is the only guy who ever gave me a chance to do something like that. I called him up and I said, hey man, I remember the first thing I said to him was I hadn't talked to him in a year. And I was like, hey, how was lunch today? Cause I called him after lunch service. It was very fucking uncomfortable. And I said, I'm finishing school. Love to come back for a little bit. And you know, try it again, you know, take everything I did before I actually knew what I was doing and come back and redo it with the fact that now I know what I'm doing. And he said, yes. And I went back over there and I redid their menu. redid all their costing, redid the kitchen, redid everything. And they were transitioning to more of an upscale kind of place as opposed to just a typical sports bar. They wanted to be like one of those upscale sports bar type places. And, you know, I changed everything over there. I changed how they were getting all their fish delivered. We just changed it. And it was awesome.
How old were you when this was going on, when you get your first job kind of running, you know, rerunning the sports bar, Virginia?
Let's see, 26 maybe?
26, 27, is that intimidating for a 26, 27-year-old walking in and having like the balls to just change over everything, or were you just that confident in yourself?
No, I was very confident. I've never had a problem with being confident. It's almost a downfall. You know, I always get asked when we do television programs not to change gears, but they ask you what your greatest strength is and what your weakness is what people would say. Like, what's your greatest trait? What's your worst trait? And I always say they're the same thing. I'm incredibly confident on everything I do, but it's almost to a point where it's a fault, you know? And so I walked in back into my old place and I got rid of a bunch of people and just changed everything and changed the entire culture of it. And, you know, it was a bit of a struggle at first, but, you know, I'm not going to sell that. I'm not going to show that, but it was, you know, that's what you do.
What was the struggle?
You know, just having people buy into what you're doing. You know, for me coming back after being there, there was a few people who had been there as I was gone. Yeah, I was at this place for 2 years before I went to culinary school, and I come back and some people are like, wow, you're coming right back here. You know, I got a big raise when I came back. I came back and completely revamped the menu and showed these guys how to actually cook, how to actually season their food, you know, and to make it something awesome. And a lot of people were very resistant to that because it adds a few extra steps into what you're doing when you're line cooking to make it the right way. But even though that we had a little bit of, resistance to that, once people started seeing the reviews coming in, it was amazing how quickly they all jumped on board. I'll never forget the first day this guy, Scotty, who had been there. Every restaurant has a Scotty. And people out there, you're listening to what I'm talking about. We all have a Scotty, a guy who washes dishes, or he's like a utility guy. You know, he probably couldn't do any other job. That's what he does, but he's a really nice guy. When he started calling me chef. And to me, that's like the biggest, you know, I've never insisted on that from anybody, but it's like the biggest compliment you could get.
So you come in and you change this entire culture. I got to assume, you know, having been in sports bars that are very nice and then some sports bars that would best be referred to as dives, that going in and changing the atmosphere in a sports bar is not something that's normally done, because a lot of sports bars just, you know, you get your wings, you get your burgers, and, you know, here's a few beers on tap. I mean,
right.
There had to be a lot of people who just were completely against you doing that. So it had to be nice to see that success come in, not just for your confidence, but kind of just, you know, to show the bosses, like, look, we can do this. We can make it work.
Yeah, and you know, that's one of the greatest things I had. No matter what happened with staffing wise or people being resistant to it, the owner of the place, John Sweeney, was behind me 100%, no matter what happened. I suspended his longest running server. She was in her 40s, and I'm 26, and she was a during the daytime, she was a probation officer for the State Police of Virginia, a very, you know, slightly intimidating woman, very nice. And she had been there. She actually had been dating the owner for a little while. I suspended her, and he backed me up on that because she wouldn't run food the way I wanted it run.
Wow. And you know, and I know that 40-year-old waitresses, a lot of times, you know, who have that kind of experience, they can't be happy with that.
No, and it literally, Kenny, it was like the night that it all happened. This place had a deck. So our kitchen was downstairs. It had a whole restaurant downstairs, another building. I mean, we would see 300, 400 people. It was insane. And you know, on a busy night, we'd get our asses handed to us. And she came down one night, and I asked her to run something upstairs. And she said, no, I'm not going up there. And I went, excuse me? She said, no, I'm not going up there. And I was like, Trish, one more time. And I'm giving her name out. Can you take this upstairs for me? Because I have a window full of food. I'm trying to get food out in time, you know? And she said no. And I told her, clock out and leave. And she was like, what? And she goes to John Sweeney, and she's like, what is he talking about? And he was like, what did he ask you to do? And he comes back, and he goes, what's going on? I said, I asked her to run food. She didn't do it. And he goes, okay, you got to go. I mean, immediately.
That has to be kind of nice, though, because there are a lot of bosses who probably wouldn't want to touch someone who's been there that long.
No, but he knew from the get-go, I'm setting the standard. This is what the standard is. If you can't handle that, then don't be here. We're trying to make something cool happen, and that's the standard. And
so
that CIA.
Go ahead.
That's CIA coming out at me. That's what I did, you know?
So when you're going through all this and you're doing everything in the sports bar, your first real experience, you're setting the standard there, you're, you know, making this menu and making this restaurant exactly what you wanted to do. I know the way you think because you and I, like, we've gotten to know each other pretty well. You know, I got to assume you're always thinking 3 or 4 steps ahead. So when you're doing the sports bar, in your mind, what are you thinking about what you want to do after that? Like, are you working that, saying, like, this is going to look great on a resume for what I want to do next? And if so, what was the next thing you wanted to do?
You know, I wasn't sure. I knew that I was doing something at this place that was pretty cool. I knew it wasn't a forever job. I knew at some point in time I'd have to move on to do better for myself. But I wasn't sure what that was. And what ended up happening when I was at CIA, I ended up interning. You know, at the time, listen, I wasn't a young guy. I had to go. I still had an apartment in Virginia when I was at CIA, and my brother was living there at the time, thankfully, to maintain it. And I knew that I'd have to do something for my internship, so I ended up going and interning. I'm backtracking a little bit here at the Jefferson Hotel. It's a 5-diamond, 5-star AAA mobile rated resort, Michelin star, incredible hotel. And I ended up applying to be an intern there, and that's where I did my internship. So I got to go home for my internship and lived in my apartment.
So you went from running a restaurant to becoming an intern.
Yeah, that's what you have to do.
For most industries, that seems like a step backward, but I could totally see in the culinary world that having the opportunity to work in a 5-star restaurant like that, even as an intern, is just awesome experience.
I had to. I mean, you know, you have to do an internship at CIA, and when I was there, like, you have to take a step backwards, and I did it. But you know, when I did it there, I met Chef Lonnie Huot, who would become the guy I consider my mentor, and I'm so proud of him. He's actually cooking at the Beard House in December. I can't believe it. Thankfully, the guy, he deserves it so much. I went to the Jefferson, and Lonnie and I, we hit it off. He told me immediately that he hated people from CIA. He said, "You don't have a work ethic. You think you're bigger than the business." And I said, "Chef, I can't tell you that anything right now. All I can do is show you." And I worked my ass off in that hotel, man. I was there every day. I'd go in on my day off, and I would prep something for somebody else. Like, that's what I would do. I would just show up. I spent hours there doing ice carving with the Garmage chef, like, just to understand it, to learn it, to know how to do that shit. And ultimately, I gained his respect. And to the point, you know, the point of the story is I gained his respect to the point that he knew when I graduated CIA, about 6 or 7 months after going back to Mulligan's in Virginia, he called me and said, "Hey, I'm going to Florida. Do you want to go and come in here? And I'm opening this giant resort in Florida. I'm going in as the executive chef. Do you want to come in as my sous chef?" And I asked my wife, and she said yes. And so we moved to Florida.
See, that's got to be – you and I have talked about this before because, you know, we live kind of – I always call myself, I live like the carny life. I'm all over the place. I do a bunch of different things. You gotta have, my wife works a traditional office job, 9-to-5.
Right.
And, you know, you got to have that kind of rock, that kind of person who's there and is willing to support you chasing down your dreams. Your wife was always really supportive of you doing this kind of thing, taking off to Florida, doing all these things, going towards your passions. She was always there for you on that, right?
Man, my wife is the rock. My wife is the reason I am who I am. I believe in life, you have to find your motivation and what motivates you. And my wife is my motivation. She is literally the reason why anything good in my life has ever happened is because of her. Yeah,
I thought you were going to expand on that. I'm not used to these phone interviews here, Plum. I'm used to, like, in person with a microphone. I've got to look you in the eye and see where you're going with it.
I know. I mean, you know, that's just, it is what it is. My wife is she's a little more reserved and quiet. I actually thought that maybe it'd be fun for her to be a part of this interview, but she's like, no.
So you get the opportunity. I'm sorry?
You haven't met my wife yet. I got to make that happen here soon.
Well, I keep on telling you, we got to go out for drinks or dinner or whatever, but, you know, you blow me off every time I invite you, so I don't know what to do.
Well, I show up to your house with cute little teeny bopper shots.
I don't know. You know what? I know a good strip club in Wolcott we can go to.
I've never been there. That's amazing.
No, you know what? You know what it is? Like, I find that, see, what you just mentioned is something that I always found really appealing about the culinary world or about a lot of different occupations is, you know, you get a phone call to go down to Florida and become the sous chef at a new, you know, at a new resort, do something absolutely new, yeah. Travel around. That had to be the most ridiculously cool experience for you.
Dude, it was insane. He had to go. And I was like, yeah, let's give it a shot. And I went down there, and I didn't know anything at the time, you know, I didn't know what to do. And I show up, and we get to the kitchen, and we're rolling, and I ended up staying in a Motel 6 that was 20 miles away, because I was not smart enough to tell them I need to stay at the resort. I don't know. I was just happy to be there. I'm like, fuck it. I'm in Florida. I'm running a resort. This is amazing. And now I'd be like, yeah, I'll come down there, but you're going to put me up and you're going to take care of all this. I mean, I was making fucking peanuts. And but I was just happy to be there. I couldn't believe I was in Florida. It was an adventure. It was the greatest thing ever. And, you know, I spent 3 weeks living in a hotel and traveling back and forth from Florida to Virginia. And until, you know, I found an apartment and figured out what the deal was. And, you know, the opening week of that resort was one of the craziest weeks of my life. I worked a 96-hour work week that week, 96 hours. And we were sleeping in a Motel 6 that was 20 miles away. We literally would get home, sleep for an hour, and get up and go back to work. It was fucking crazy. And the grand opening of the resort had Sheryl Crow play. And I got to meet her, which was great. And, you know, we had all these things happening, and, you know, I kind of neglected to mention when I was working at the Jefferson Hotel, I got to work under Sean Brock as well, who is an incredibly renowned chef and an incredible guy, great dude, super, I mean, just talk about smart food people, this guy is on a whole fucking other level. He was a sous chef at the Jefferson Hotel, but at the opening of the resort, Lonnie asked him to come down and be a part of the grand opening for the resort. So here comes, you know, Sean Brock back to the resort to work at Hammock Beach, where I was at. And I got more opportunity to work with this guy and pick his brain and hang out and drink beers the night. I mean, it was just fucking amazing. That night after the grand opening, we were just exhausted. And I remember sitting on a lawn chair facing the beach on this beautiful resort and just looking out there going, wow, this is crazy where I'm at right now. Thinking that just a few years ago, I was talking to Doc at Applebee's on rib night. Like, this is fucking crazy. And how fun is it? But having that camaraderie at the end of the night, like, that beer is the best beer, and that cigarette is the best fucking cigarette you've ever had in your life after doing 2,200 people, three action stations, having your ice carving of a boat that you made that has all this raw seafood in it fucking collapse because the legs melted too quick, like, because you didn't figure out the fucking equation right about how much ice melted half an inch per hour at 85 degrees or some crazy shit. And just, you finish the night and you can't believe what you've done. It's amazing.
Now, you mentioned Sean Brock. When I went down to Nashville, you recommended that Maura and I, my wife, go to his place, Huss, which was out of this freaking world. I told you, man. So that place was one of our favorite things the entire trip when we went down there.
He's
out of this world with what he does. I could totally envision, like, sitting back and looking at where you are and thinking how cool that is. You know, but obviously you didn't stay there forever. Did you look at that as possibly a forever job, or did you look at that as, like, this is just the next step and we got something bigger coming up?
I don't know, man. You know, I don't think I've ever thought about forever. I've always thought about tomorrow, not to sound cliche. Like, you know, I think forever is too long. Like, it's too tough to prepare for forever. I mean, you know, you work for yourself, too. It's so hard to think forever when you're trying to figure out what you're going to be doing tomorrow. And I knew that being at this resort was amazing. And I thought that, you know, I could move up in the resort and, you know, they had a couple of them. Maybe I could take over one. But I don't know, man. Like, I still wanted to, like, I like making people laugh, you know. And I still like making food and stuff. And that was great. And I could feel my career kind of moving up and up and up. And in this business, I mean, you know, it's tough to find a guy at the same place for a long time. But I loved it. But I was looking for more of the kind of being in charge type role.
Okay, so what do you do after Florida then? What was the next being in charge kind of role to go in that direction?
Yeah, well, in Florida, I actually was still in Florida, and I ended up leaving the resort and taking a job at a corporate restaurant, which almost made me leave the business. It was a corporate. Yeah, it was the worst decision I ever made. I went to this corporate place called Buca di Beppo. It was family style Italian food, and it was the worst experience of my life. And I almost quit the business. Like, I would be there busting my ass as the assistant kitchen chef or the not quite sous chef, but higher up, whatever they would call it. They didn't call things by the standard brigade system. Like, it would be executive chef, and then there was, like, two executive chefs, and I was one of them, which was why I went over there. I mean, they paid me pretty well, but I worked my ass off. And I remember sitting on a sales call on Christmas Day. I'm sorry, not Christmas Day, Christmas week, being on a sales call. Because I had to be on a fucking sales call, because that's where I should be, you know what I mean? On a fucking sales call, as opposed to being on fucking line making food or trying to inspire somebody to make great food. You know, and I remember them saying about how we had to make up for the sales because we were closed on Christmas. And it really struck me the wrong way. I was like, that's not what this is about, man. And I ended up, they had a big meeting. They invited me into the meeting. I think they were going to tell me that they were going to get rid of two of the managers there. They wanted me to stay. They were going to give me a raise. And I totally blindsided them when I said, I'm done. And they were like,
and then
what?
You left without a net. You didn't have anything else going on. You just left to get, like...
Yeah, I just left. It wasn't right. And I was like, you know what, man? I mean, this business is garbage. I can't believe that people do this for a living. Like, I'm working my ass off. I never see my wife. Like, this is fucking stupid. And I was like, I'm going to try to get a job doing something else. I don't know. I have a degree, at least that Matt. Like, maybe do something with food. Maybe I'll, I don't know. I had no idea what to do. And
what do you end up doing? You end up leaving without a net. Where do you end up going?
Well, I walked in to buy a bottle of wine at a place called The Vineyard. And I met one of the most amazing people at this place. His name was Howard Smead. This place is called The Vineyard in Ormond Beach, Florida. And it was basically like a wine shop that had some beer, had some gourmet stuff. They did a lot of catering, had really high-end cheeses. It's Florida, so nothing makes sense. They just have all the shit. And we talked, and he was like, so what are you doing now? And I said, man, I'm not doing anything. I'm buying a bottle of wine. I'm going to go home and have some wine. That's my plan. He's like, what are you doing tomorrow? I was like, I don't know. And he's like, why don't you come back here and talk to me? So I go back, and they hired me as executive chef and gave me free reign and didn't care if I wore check pants or striped pants. It was amazing because they closed at 7 o'clock. So I would go to work at 10, and I'm done at 7. And I've never had a job like that in my life. And then we would have catering jobs and things like that where you had to work later. But when you worked later, you got paid for it. I couldn't believe it. Like, you would get, you know, cash money. And it really was one of my favorite jobs I've ever had. And these people, I just fell in love with them. I mean, they were, you know, Howard was in his 60s. And his girlfriend, Ida, was about the same age. But they wouldn't get married. And they were, I'm pretty sure they were swingers. And they would, like, invite us over their house. It was all very strange. But super cool people, and rest in peace. He died a couple years ago, but completely reinvigorated me and changed my life. I was out of the business. I was done, and this man brought me in, gave me free reign, let me do whatever I wanted to do, and it completely changed my life.
See, like, stories like that, like about you walking in to grab a bottle of wine and then you end up finding your next job, is definitely one of the reasons that you and I get along so well, because it's a mindset that a lot of people don't understand. Like, my wife does not grasp the concept, and obviously I'm not in the food world, but my wife doesn't grasp the concept of, I don't know if something else is going to come up, or I don't know, we're going to figure out what happens next. You know, a lot of people have this really structured mindset, and, you know, it's a lot of parallels. I can understand why you and I get along, because, you know, whatever, something else is going to come up. That's like kind of the self-employment, the DIY mindset.
Right. You just, I mean, something, it'll work itself out. We'll figure it out. It'll be fine. You know, I mean, listen, you're a talented guy, and that's what you lean on. You know that your talents and what you can do will pull you through to the next chapter of your story. And that's how I looked at it, you know?
So I don't want to skip over a bunch of other stuff, but I know I wanted to get to, you know, the thing that I know a lot of people know you from the television stuff that you do. So
yeah.
I kind of want to know, and, you know, I feel bad jumping over a bunch of stuff, but you know, how did you make the decision that you wanted to kind of get involved on the entertainment end of the food world?
Well, you know, it's you're not really jumping over a whole lot. You know, as far as the Florida part goes, we were there. We ended up staying longer. We extended our lease of our apartment that we had because I was so happy at our job. And, you know, my wife wanted to come home. And my wife's from Connecticut, and she wanted to come home. We've been in Florida for over 2.5 years. And so we came home to her, and we bought a house, and we knew it was time to settle down. And you know, I took my first private chef client and did that thing, and it was great, and started my own business, which we're still running to this day, in 2006. And, you know, I ended up seeing, long story short, I ended up seeing an audition for a show called The Taste on ABC. And I said, you know what, man, I've been a theater guy. I've been an actor. I've always tried to make dick jokes. It just makes sense. So let me go to it. And Kenny, I went into this audition. I actually got to skip all the crap, and they called me because I had made a bunch of shit on Twitter to them and emailed them, and they actually ended up asking me. I bugged the shit out of them. They asked me to come for a private interview as opposed to having to go to the open call. And I went in there, Kenny, and the first thing I did, just because I remember from being in theater, they would say, you got to make an impression. You know, you have to make an impression. Always say your name first and finish your audition after it and say your name again, but make them remember you. Why would they, what would separate you from everybody else? So I went in there and I did my best Dusty Rhodes impression I could do. And I cut a 3.5 minute, 1985, Spring Stampede Dusty Rhodes promo on the casting producer. Talked about riding in on a lightning bolt, and it was nuts. And they were on the floor laughing at me. And that's kind of what was the genesis. That's what started it.
So you started doing that. I mean, and you obviously kind of enjoyed it then, because you know you were pursuing other things, entertainment based. You've done Guy's Grocery Games, which you won. You've done Cutthroat Kitchen, which you lost on Scotch Eggs in the first round.
Thank you, appreciate that, throwing that out there. Thank you.
Problem. Every single time you have me do something publicly with you, I'm going to make fun of you for Cutthroat Kitchen.
Can we just point out? Can we point out one thing?
Cutthroat Kitchen's been on it, so I can't say anything.
But can we point out one thing about that episode of Cutthroat Kitchen? Yes, I went out in the first round. However, the hour-long show, half an hour of it is all me.
Oh no! I told you, my wife and I watched it because you told me you were going to be on it. So my wife and I are watching it, and even my wife made the comment when you got eliminated. She goes, well, the entire first half of the episode was about Plum, and then, you know, not even the first half of the episode. After you got eliminated, the first segment was them still talking about you.
I know.
Which I thought was hilarious. I mean, yeah, you definitely were like kind of the star of that show, but you know, you enjoyed the entertainment aspect enough where you decided that's the direction you wanted to go. You wanted to go kind of like trying to get involved on that end a little heavier.
I just love it, man. I mean, it's I think it's fun. And I mean, what's better in this world than, you know, there's so much bad shit in this world. Everything is bad. You turn the news on, it's some fucking end of the world horse shit they're trying to scare us to death with. And here I am with a chance to cook food and make people laugh. I mean, and to me, there's just, I mean, life's too short to not do that. And so I have, not to sound big-headed, but, you know, and by the way, we can go a couple minutes longer if you want here. It's cool. I have a knack for that, for making great food and making people laugh and, you know, trying to be, you know, a personality that sets people apart and makes people happy. And this is the time that we live in now. I can do that. You know, I have that opportunity, and you have to work for it, but you know, you can do it. You just got to work for it and have that chance to do it. So I guess I'm lucky to be where I'm at now, you know?
If you had the choice though, I mean, if you had the choice of deciding to go towards the entertainment end or, you know, doing something more with, like, the camaraderie of the kitchen end, do you know which direction you'd go if you were given, like, kind of the fork in the road?
I'm going to say the best cook answer you're ever going to hear in your life. Whichever one pays more, bro. Whichever one pays more.
That's the answer most people get for most things.
No, you know, I don't know, man. I hope to one day figure out a way to make it all work together. You know, having the opportunity to do things like I said, food's been very, very good to me. Food has given me my wife. Food has given me my house. Food has given me the opportunity to buy a new car that I just bought. You know, food has also put me on television. Food has put me in front of people who would never fucking ever see me in a different life. You know, food has given me the opportunity to have this amazing radio. Food has let me meet incredibly cool people such as yourself. Without food, none of that happens. Food has had, you know, given me this radio show, which has become popular and people like it, people dig it, and it's incredibly humbling. And I started this whole fucking thing just to get better at interviewing people, and it's turned into its own monster because of what people say and what people like and people tuning in and downloading and listening live. And it's amazing, and it's all come from food. And to that, like, you know, I think it's a camaraderie altogether in itself. You know, it may be a different cast of characters, you know, but it's still the same thing. It still comes down to the same intangible. It's food, and food has given me all that.
Well, you know what, man? You know, you asked me on here for 50 episodes, and, you know, I'm happy to do it. I'm honored that you asked me. And, it's really cool, man. I mean, it's very cool. And getting to know you over the last year plus has been super cool, man. And I think the attitude that you carry through life, and I'll tell you, because, like, you know, you and I have had times on the phone where I'm calling you up and I'm bitching about things and vice versa. And, you know, the attitude that you carry through life is something that I think, even if you're not in the food world, is something that a lot of people should carry through, which is just, you know, always look at it from the positive perspective, always, you know the next thing's going to come. It's definitely a positive attitude to carry through. And, you know, all the stuff that you've built, you know, you built for yourself. And I think that's something that's extremely admirable, being someone who's a DIY guy. I literally have the words "do it yourself" on my sleeve. You know, I appreciate that mentality. And, you know, I think it's awesome. And, you know, I don't know. We got a couple minutes left. I mean, I kind of want to leave it to you. I mean, this is I'm house sitting, man. This is your show. So, I mean, do you got anything you want to hit on before we wrap it up tonight?
Well, dude, I mean, of course, first of all, thank you for taking the time to come on here and talk to me and help me tell my story. And it's amazing that people actually fucking care and want to hear this part of this story, which is just crazy to me. You know, I started this show, like I said, just to be silly, and it's become kind of its own thing, and it's opened some doors, and we've had some great people on, and a lot of people know we're actually negotiating with Emeril Lagasse's people to have him on the show, which would be fucking insane. No guarantees, but we're working on it. But having the opportunity to meet, you know, people like you and what you do, and, you know, it's amazing to have that chance. And it's incredibly humbling. And, you know, listen, this show is all about, we've been very serious this episode, which is kind of crazy. But to have those chances and to have those opportunities, even to be part of the True Cooks family and be with those guys, and those guys are just so accepting. And let me tell you about a group of people that is supportive, dude. It would blow your mind the amount of just positive messages I get DM'd to me from these people who are just trying to, you know, looking out for you. It's that whole camaraderie thing. It's become nationwide, as opposed to just the guys in your restaurant. It's crazy. And to have the chance to come on here and tell my story and have people want to hear it, and then have someone as professional as you, by the way, you made me look bad. I appreciate it. So that's awesome.
There's a joke in there somewhere. I'm not going to make it.
Yeah. Well, we're getting emotional now. You can't make jokes and then I feel stupid. And then
listen, I can make a million jokes. We didn't, you know, there was a part of me that was like, I really want to take this into strip club story territory, and, you know, a bunch of different things, because you and I could just be,
I don't know,
probably
what you're talking about.
For a couple hours just about some ridiculous stories. But I mean, I think it's kind of cool to hear your story, and I'm looking at it from like the perspective of, what would someone want to listen to while they're driving? And I think your story is kind of cool. So it might have been a little more serious than your normal episode, but next week, if you want me to come back, I'll make dick jokes the entire time, whatever you want. So that's your story.
Well, dude, the door is always open. You know that, for whatever I can ever do for you. You're a great guy. And you and I, like I said, we've become pretty good friends over this time frame that we've been talking to each other and stuff. As a matter of fact, I called you this afternoon over a frustrating thing, just a vent, and you were there to listen to it. And, you know, that's what friends are about. And to me, in the culinary world, that's what it's about. It's about, you know, non-judgment, people who are going to be there for you no matter what. I think you'd make a great line cook, dude. I think you should be down. You should come on in. Come over to the dark side. We'll make you a great line cook. Hey, above all things, you'll be able to make a great dinner for your wife. How about that?
Yeah, well, I don't think you've ever seen me behind the stove. I'm not good. I can grill. If you put me, like, outside on a deck with a grill, I'll be awesome for you. You put me, like, you know, behind, like, some professional equipment and tell me to make scrambled eggs, it's going to come out burnt. You know, I'm a guy who I enjoy going to extremely nice restaurants and eating with the professionals cook, and then going home and realizing how much I suck at cooking. That's what I enjoy doing. Because,
well, listen, you and I have had some adventures.
You have me as one of the judges for the Chef's Challenge, man. And I'm walking around and I'm looking at what all these guys are doing, like Carlos from The Spread, and
you know,
More Power Foodie and Streetery, and what all these guys are doing, man. And it like blew me away, because I'm a guy who, like, you know, I have to read the directions when I'm making couscous.
Right.
So
that was a fun night. That was a fun night, man. We had a good time that night. That was a great event. And obviously, you know, you'll be back next year for that. And, you know, some other things on the table that I'm going to have you be a part of with me as well. It's just the way it goes. You know, I say, if I can, one last slight inspirational thing I'll say to everybody is this. Everybody in the world is so concerned with getting their own piece of the pie. I think that we should just make a bigger pie. And we can make a bigger pie by all doing it together. And I think that's the biggest thing that we can keep in mind when you check out this show and when you listen to what's going on. And, you know, we have some great guests on, some cool people on, but everybody seems to subscribe to that. And one of the guys right now that hardcore subscribes to that is my man Ken, who has taken his time on his Monday night. He had to pause wrestling to come on. I'm sorry, you paused wrestling and Monday Night Football? Did you do both? Or
I've got Monday Night Football on mute, to be completely fair. I am in a fantasy football dogfight right now between Cam Newton and T.Y. Hilton. So
Oof. And you're also I feel bad for you. You're a Dolphins fan. You're having a very up and down year, so to speak.
Oh, you're a Steelers fan. You're going to talk to me about an up and down year? We should steal the full team. Let me know.
You know, they called me a little while ago and asked if I could play running back. Meanwhile, but yeah, I appreciate you coming on here. Make sure you follow Kenny at Rhymes with Pen on Instagram. On Twitter and on Instagram. It's Ken's SPT. What the fuck does that mean? What is your Instagram?
Ken SPT. That's my Samuel Patrick Tuccio. I gotta change my Instagram to Rhymes with Pen. That's
your Instagram name? That's your Samuel Patrick Tuccio?
Kenneth Samuel Patrick Tuccio. Samuel is my father's name. Tuccio is obviously my last name. Patrick is my confirmation name because I grew up a really big fan of Patrick Ewing, so I got to choose my own confirmation name. So, you know, I told everyone it was St. Patrick, but in reality I was getting named after a large African-American center from Georgetown, the New York Knicks.
What I think of when I see you as a large African-American basketball player, it's exactly what I think about when I see you.
I think more Muggsy Bogues, personally, but that's fine.
Muggsy Bogues, not bad. Not a Mookie Blaylock.
No, you're never going to look at me and see a Mookie. That's just not happening.
Well, dude, I appreciate you coming out here and doing this tonight, man. And it's been a lot of fun talking here. And I got to pick my game up now that I've had you on because you really kept the professional broadcaster thing going here like a champion. Next week, you guys, we have one of the most amazing guys on social media is the amazing Steve Green, who hosts Foodie Chats. That's hashtag Foodie Chats on Instagram, on Twitter. I keep wanting to say Instagram because I'm doing more Instagram stuff, Kenny. I don't know what's wrong with me. So make sure you check him out.
My Instagram is filled with food photos and cat photos, so you're not getting a lot from me.
I just got a message from someone that says you're more like a Charles Barkley. I'm not sure if I see that or not. I don't know.
I don't think they've ever seen a photo of me if they're comparing me to Charles Barkley. I think I'm more of a Mark Price than a Charles Barkley or a John Stockton.
But we're throwing in basketball names. I'm not very good at that. But next week, we're going to have a huge episode. We're having Steve Green, from the founder of Foodie Chats, on his hashtag Foodie Chats. That happens every Monday night. You can't miss it. He's going to be on the show. And, man, we've got some big things coming up. I'm calling this season 3. This will be, it's just crazy. The show has gone on this long, man. 50 episodes. That's insane, dude, right? I mean, not for you. Yeah. You've got, 923, and you're hanging out with CNN, and you're hanging out with all these big name celebrity types. I don't know if I can hang with you, dude.
Well, listen, there's my world and then there's your world, Plum.
I choked on my beer. I couldn't even get a line out because I was trying to swallow. You can't do that. You got to give me a chance to swallow before you fucking shoot me down.
Oh, please don't set me up with the line. You got to give me a chance to swallow. Please don't do that.
I'm an asshole.
we've kept it clean the entire night, and then you throw that one out there. You lob that softball, my friend, and I didn't swing because it's your show. It. So much like you, I'm just gonna take it.
I deserve it though. You should have taken the swing. I would have. You should. I was fucking taking the swing. You know, I didn't bite. You noticed that you were fishing with the strip club lines. I didn't bite on that shit at all.
I know you didn't. I know you didn't. that's a whole separate podcast. We'll do that for episode 69 with the strip clubs.
Episode 69 is really what the fuck. All right, there you go. Hey, check it out, you guys. I'm gonna give my man Ken Tuccio giant props for coming on tonight. Make sure you check out his podcast, Welcome to Connecticut, on iTunes. It's fantastic, man. Hey, who's on the show this week?
This week's episode, we got Bar Sugo, actually. Food episode, Bar Sugo, Pat Pascarella, Chef Pat. Awesome guy. Episode goes live on Thursday. Awesome place, Barsugo in Norwalk. Best Italian food in Norwalk, in my opinion.
This is the thing, man. You call yourself, you said earlier you're not a food person, but I disagree, man. You're totally in the food scene here, especially locally in Connecticut in the Tri-State area. Like, you're totally in the food scene because you talk to these people, you're a part of their lives, and you have them on the show. And for that, as a food guy, as a chef, I thank you because we need more stuff like that.
Oh, dude, I mean, not for nothing. If there's one thing I like doing on my show, I don't care what your talent – I don't care – I like focusing on talented people. I don't care whether you're a musician or, you know, a writer or especially a chef. And chefs are the most talented people in the world to me, man. If I could highlight those guys on my show, I'll do it every week. I love those guys.
Damn, there you go. On that note, I think we should let Ken take them. We should turn his mic off because that was a pretty good compliment there for all of us out there. Dude, you're the man. I appreciate it. Big things in the future. I know what's going on. But big things, brother. Best of luck to you. And I can't thank you enough for your time, man. You're awesome.
Anything you ever need, buddy. Congratulations on 50.
Thank you, my friend. I'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon.
Later, buddy. There he goes on down the road. That's my man, Ken Tuccio. And he interviewed me. That was very strange. I had to bring it back to being a conversation. I don't know. Listen here. Let's see what happens, man. It's going to be a great show next week. We've got my man, Steve Green, coming on. He is, like I said, the founder of Foodie Chat. That's hashtag Foodie Chat on Twitter. You can't miss it if you're on Twitter at all. And you can follow me. You know what? Hang on. Before we go on Twitter, let's just see what's going on here. Hang on one second. Let's see what this call is. I have a call here on hold. They've been here for a minute. We have a couple calls on hold. This one's been here the longest. Let's see what's going on here. Hang on tight. Let's see what we got. Hey, what's going on? It's Chef Slum. You're on. Hey, who's there?
Hey, this is George.
Hey, what's up, man? How are you?
Man, I'm doing good, man. Just got the email reminder and realized it was a little late to the party.
That's all right, dude. That's all right, man. How's your day been? You doing all right?
Oh, man, I'm doing pretty good. I actually just finished my last shift until Thursday. I got tomorrow off. I got Wednesday off, which is my 25th, and then I got Thursday morning off. So I'm actually, you know, kind of getting fucked up for the next couple days.
There you go. That's what's going on, man. So you got to check out some of the episodes tonight, man. We're starting season 3. I've had a lot of people ask for me to tell my story and why the fuck I'm here talking on the radio. And you know, you got to check out some of that, man. What do you think? How bad was it? Was it terrible?
Nah, not at all, man. I look forward to these shows. I'm not going to lie. I always forget because Monday I always got other shit like in my head going on. But I'm glad I tuned in for this episode, especially for it was Ken SPT, I believe.
That's right. Ken Tuccio.
His little story that really hit home, how he was telling me how, because I never went to culinary school, but he said he went to culinary school at the CAA, took a job where he volunteered as helping the guard manager doing his ice sculptures and all that, just to prove that, hey, listen, man, I'm not just some culinary school, like, snobby know-it-all. Like, I actually want to learn and get down in the trenches. And that really was like, hell yeah, like, so much respect for that. Especially from where he went there to where he is now. That's incredible.
That's actually my story, dog. And we had Ken on to help me tell my story.
Bad.
That people
like I said,
asked
I didn't drink. My bad.
I've been drinking, dude. You're the man. Yeah, so Ken came on to help me tell my story tonight and what I've been through. People had asked to hear it. So, bro, I appreciate you checking us out. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. It makes all the difference in the world. And, bro, you're the man. I enjoyed meeting you over at the True Cooks event and hope to hear from you soon.
You know, Mr. Pond, if I may interrupt, you know, it's crazy. I was actually just on Instagram while I was listening to your podcast, and I found a picture on my phone of you, A on the Hill, and Sweet Kicks by Sarah that I was actually just, like, typing out the captions. I think I was about to do the hashtag part. So,
oh, there
like,
you go.
Then you said, hello? And I'm like, no one's answering. Oh, shit, that's probably me.
Fuck you all up, dude. Look here, man. I appreciate the support, man. Thank you so much, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Oh, no problem, man. Next Monday, I believe, same time, same place.
You got it, brother. We got a great guest on. It's me, Steve Green from hashtag Foodie Chats, which has become a whole other fucking animal in itself. This guy is awesome. He's going to be a great conversation.
Foodie Chats. All right, man. Well, I appreciate you accepting my call, and until next time, thank you.
You got it, brother. Take care.
You too, brother.
You know, it's funny, man, because you hear some cooks come on, and my man's enjoying the show and having the whole thing. He thinks my whole story is Kenny's story. That's fucking great. Can't wait to call Kenny and tell him that. Let's do one more here before I get on down the road. Let's see what's going on here. What's up, man? Chef Lime, you calling in. What's going on? Yo, you there?
Yo.
I knew it was my man Adam calling in. What's up, brother? How are you?
What's going on, man? How you doing, Plum?
You know, just wrapping up, finishing up a long trail ale. Got to piss like a champion.
Same here. I got to top down a couple of beers. You know how it is Monday night. Got to grind tomorrow.
No doubt, man. No doubt. No doubt. So, you got a little time to check out the show this evening, I guess, right?
Yeah, Ken, he's a funny guy, man. I love him. He's fucking hilarious.
He's a good dude, man. He's one of my closest friends these days. He's a great guy, and I appreciate him coming on and helping me tell my story, you know? I mean, it's just, we've had a lot of people ask about this story, and having Ken, I mean, it would be stupid for me to interview myself, so I figure having Kenny come on and do it would be a great way to get it going.
Couldn't be any better, dude.
So, yeah,
wouldn't have it any other way.
I appreciate you checking it out. So what the fuck are you calling in for? You got a question? You got an answer? You got a comment? You got some, send me some naked pictures? What are we doing?
Pictures of, you got my cell phone number, man. You know, you got to keep that on the side.
There you go.
No, I just want to call and say mad props, dude. You know, it was great meeting you, great knowing you, and I can't wait for our adventures to go even farther down the road, brother.
That's what it's about. It's about culinary adventures because you only get one chance at this motherfucker thing called life that we got. You got one chance.
Hell yeah.
The best of you can. There's no point in sitting around scared of shit. There's no point in sitting around and questioning whether you should or shouldn't do something. Just fucking do it because you get one chance at it. And as the great American rock and roll band once said, one of my favorites on the planet, the Red Hot Chili Peppers, it's better to regret something you did than something you didn't do. You know what I'm saying?
Word up. That's fucking right, dude.
There you go.
Word up.
Dude, I appreciate the call, and I'll catch you on down the road.
Hell yeah, brother. We'll be talking soon, man.
My man. There he goes, down the road. The Connecticut Chef's Challenge champion this year, my man, Chef Adam Bedini. Check him out at CT Street 3. He's a great dude. Let's get into a – he's becoming a regular, huh? How about that? I like regulars. Let's get into a couple of plugs and get my shit on down the road here. Here we go. Wait, change the plan. Here we go. It's kicking in. Give it a second. It's got a long intro. Give it a second. It's coming. Yeah, here we go.
I need a little space in my mind.
That's right.
I need that little hope I can't find.
No doubt.
I need a little faith.
Faith. Yeah.
Too much to
hell no.
My soul.
That's right, y'all. You're checking out episode, it's actually 51 because I fucked up last week, but we're calling it episode 50. I want a big shout out, a big thanks to my man, Ken Tuccio, the host of Welcome to Connecticut, coming on here tonight, taking the reins, and throwing a little interview my way. What a great guy. Just an amazing guy. I can't thank him enough for coming out here and making this happen, and what a fun episode. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Checking out what I'm talking about and what I've been through and my struggles. But listen, my struggles are no different than your struggles. We've all been there. We've all been through shit. That's what pulls us all together. That's the fabric that brought us to where we are. That's like the seam, which is food. And we're all here right now talking food. You can follow me on Twitter at Chef_Plum. That's at Chef_Plum as well as on them Instagram, which is my new jam I'm working on. It's at Chef_Plum on Instagram. That's at Chef_Plum on them Instagrams. Follow me on that. We got a lot of big events coming up. November 13th, Friday the 13th, we are taking over Plum Love Food. Just taking over Baldanza's Cafe down in New Canaan. That's right, folks. New Canaan, Connecticut. We are taking over doing a 7-course menu. It's going to be badass. It's another culinary adventure for me and my people. Big shout out to my man Redline. Couldn't do it without him. It's going to be badass. Check it out if you can. We got a big pop-up dinner coming up. The announcement next week on that is going to be happening. A giant pop-up dinner. Bringing it back. It's the fall. It's time for it. So let's make it happen. Again, big thanks to my man, Ken Tuccio, the host of Welcome to Connecticut. You can find him at Rhymes with Penn on Twitter. And, of course, Ken, at KenSPT, which is, I just figured out what that meant, on Instagram. Make sure you check him out there. He's got a lot of big things coming up. Huge stuff. The man is doing amazing things, and he's a good friend of mine. Make sure you check him out there. In the meantime and in between time, before I get into my closing, I want to say thank you to all you guys who spend your Monday nights with me checking out this show. We do it live. We do it for free for you. Come in here. We interview great people, and to have the opportunity to talk to you guys is an amazing, amazing opportunity that I'm truly humbled by. and truly thankful for. It's one of my favorite things to do during the week. I look forward to Mondays every week because I get the chance to come on here, talk to great people, and talk to you guys. So thank you guys very much for the opportunity. And season three, you know, I look forward to it, man. As long as you guys want it, we're going to keep doing it. We got some great guests lined up. And next week, Steve Green from @BootyChat on Twitter. In the meantime and in between time, remember, food is one of the most important things that we have in life. Everything important in life happens around food. Let's make sure we give it the time that it deserves. My name is Chef Plum, and I'll see you guys next week. Take care.
I came to play. There's a price to pay. Tough for you to get down on your knees. I came to play.